And welcome to Weather and Ag and Focus on this Friday, March 21st. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel, and it's a windy and much colder day today than it was yesterday. That's typical of spring, up and down, up and down. But I'll tell you what, you step outside yesterday, it felt a little more like spring. Today feels a little more like winter with a bite in the air and wind chills in the teens and 20s across much of the area. So a little bit warmer where you're at, Bridget. Lucky.
So far, so good. Yeah, it looks like it's a day that's going to be close to mid-70s, so we'll take it. I mean, if you're going to be out of town, go to places that are slightly warmer.
That's exactly right.
You know, it's going to continue to warm up as things move up towards the upper Midwest, because I'm pretty sure all those folks in Nebraska, it's not going to take too terribly long before the snow that they received this week, and in Iowa is probably going to melt off. I have talked to several folks this morning who mentioned that they are out of power. A lot of power lines
still
down in that storm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It could be 2 weeks. Ugh. There are active power crews out there that are doing their best to help, which is similar to what happens when we have an issue and power crews come to our rescue. So there's a lot of folks working real hard to bring everybody back online. When you look at that neighborhood, there's certainly plenty of agribusiness as you get into Iowa. They definitely want to make sure they have power and or generators, because that's a heavy hog production in the state of Iowa. So got to keep those pigs happy and healthy indoors.
No doubt. Well, one of the things I want to touch on real quick here, because this hit close to home when I found this out today, is everybody knows about the Doge cuts and, you know, whatever side of the aisle you lean on, that's your choice. But when it hits close to home, they just made some cuts in the National Weather Service, NOAA. And we just found out yesterday into today that there's quite a few sites due to the lack of staffing. Now, the National Weather Service offices across the U.S. have already been short-staffed, and they do rotating shift work. And you're probably thinking, well, boo-hoo. But with short staff and rotating shift work, now they are going to scrap launching weather balloons at some crucial sites, two in Nebraska, one in South Dakota. And I'll tell you what, it doesn't sound like much, and there's other sites that they're scrapping too, but this plays a big role when it comes to severe weather forecasting. We need to know what's going on above us to be able to forecast what's going on, what's going to happen here at the surface, and this is just a huge hit when it comes to severe weather season around the corner. This also goes, you know, all the data that we ingest from these weather balloons that get launched, all of that gets put into our supercomputers, which, you know, basically print out all these different forecast models. And when you're missing data and data in crucial areas, especially coming right off of the Rockies, this could really mess up with some of the forecasting models. So, it's a tough hit, and hopefully they reverse that. We'll see what happens. But so it's hit the weather community right now. How has it hit the ag community yet, Bridget? Has it in any way, shape, or form?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Now, first things first, I'm going to set up these parameters for us and the fact that we need to remember this. Anytime that you have been in private business and cutbacks have been made, you can see where things get cut deeply to the bone, if you will, and then they can come back after decisions are made, and you can certainly argue the for or against what you wanted to make sure stayed viable. Now, that's probably going to happen here. Did we cut too deeply in a number of agencies? We could have. Will things change? Probably. Now, when it comes to the ag community, we had a lot of payments that were frozen from USDA, payments that had been part of that previous packages, such as CRP, EQIP, etc. It goes to show that a number of folks stuck their neck out, so to speak, to do updates and to make improvements, but then are waiting for money on the backside of that, and currently some of that's in question. We have been told that the $30 million in programs that needs to be released will be released and will be paid out to farmers coming up very shortly, but we know that there's other cuts that have happened as well, and we're just going to have to watch and see what takes place. I know it doesn't feel very good. In fact, we have a guest coming up here in April. We're going to talk about the farm to school menus and where we have local raised food, beef, fruits, and vegetables that have been taken to schools. A lot of those programs have been cut. How has that affected what's happening locally? What's their anticipated timeline to see if that comes back and more? So there's a lot of probably a lot more in question than we know the answers to at this point. But yes, the DOGE has made a difference in Department of Ag, USDA.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of stinks. I know I've got a lot of friends that work in the National Weather Service, and they're taking it a little harder than, you know, the general public is, and I can see their point. You know, when you're already short staffed and you're doing rotating shift work, and then you're extremely tired if you've got to do split shifts and stuff like that. So understandable, like you said, Bridget. Hopefully that after these cuts that dig a little deeper, and hopefully more changes are made for the better, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. But okay. Hey, this is a big day too, because we're giving away our quilt today, aren't we?
We are. And so that's a big positive note for a Friday. This quilt is featuring A Farmer's Prayer. It is a handmade quilt. It's 5x7, and it's at our studios for its lucky recipient. I have been taking nominations from those who wanted to nominate their favorite farmer or farm family to receive the quilt, and the quilt is indeed sponsored by Viving Oil and Propane, Fullerton Elevator, Sendak Cooperative, as well as Tripoli Incorporated. I do have a winner for us. I had to cut everybody off at the time that show started today at 1 o'clock, because we said we were going to do it in this hour. And our winner who's going to receive our quilt, Bob Dries. Okay. What makes him special? Well, in the application I received about Bob, the nomination said the Dries family has been farming in the Red River Valley since the 1920s.
Wow.
The Dries family farm is fourth generation. They have a reputation for being progressive, using up-to-date methods, and a commitment to outstanding stewardship. Family is a strong part of their business. Bob Dries and his daughter Kristen provided an educational tour and history of their farm for homeschool children in the region. They have taken the time to teach students about crops, seeds, equipment that gets used, the business side of their farm, and how it's managed. They are proud North Dakota farmers interested in passing along their history and sharing their knowledge of the community. So congratulations to Bob Dries. I'll be reaching out to Bob to get that quilt into his hands for him and his daughter, Kristen. So that's just one of many nominations that I have received.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, and congrats, Bob and Kristen, and four generations. Woof.
Well, I think it's fair to say that in this region, we have that. I have several friends in Montana who are 6 and 3 ranchers. North Dakota, I think 4 and 5 generations is not terribly surprising. Some of the other folks that were nominated, I received typical information in the nomination form. Maybe I shouldn't say typical, but really glowing reports. So such as one particular family that is working in regenerative agriculture. They're implementing practices. They're working to restore their soils as well as human health. They have even gone so far as to create a homegrown eczema solution that they're able to use because eczema was running in their family. We also have a nomination that says we've got folks that work full time. They're working as salesmen for ag equipment and then farming alongside brothers and parents, instilling all that feeling of agriculture and the business deeply into their families, their children included. Great nominations from so many folks. I had another one that says, this gentleman's uncle, he's 77, farmed his whole life. He's the youngest of 9. And even though grandparents struggled with health problems, this brother and his sister took time to not only take care of the parents, but the family farm. So there's a lot of true grit, determination. Farming can be a livelihood. Farming can deeply be in your blood. But farming also sometimes just have to remember it's a job. Do your very best. And remember that you are helping others in the same way that every other industry does as well. So thanks to those farmers, particularly as we work through National Ag Week. It's been a great week to celebrate with so many. So, and again, thank you to Bob Dries for what you do, and I'll be making sure that quote gets out to you. That's just one thing we get to do today. We should have so many more. One of them is talking with our guest today, Gerilyn Mellencamp. Gerilyn and her husband, Richard, are in Indiana, and it's interesting to note that not only do they have what you'd consider traditional farming methods with corn, they have a fresh flour business. Flour farming, not the baking flour, but some different flour farming. And we're going to talk with them after we hear from the markets and the American Ag Network. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And don't forget, if you have questions, you are certainly welcome to reach out to us on the JLA Insurance Hotline. And that is 701-293-9000. We take emails, weather or ag at flagfamily.com. And you can watch us on YouTube, Facebook, and Acres TV. We are under WDAY, Weather and Ag in Focus. Next week, Wednesday, that is March 26th, there will be a movie at the Fargo Theater. It's free. It's all about farming, particularly focusing on regenerative farming practices with a family from Laverne, Minnesota. That's the Fikema Family Farms movie. It's called From the Heartland. And join us at 7 o'clock after the movie. There will be a question and answer panel. I'll get to moderate with some of our area farmers. I'm looking forward to doing that to cap off what we've done to celebrate National Ag Week. The movie's free, the popcorn is free, and we'd love to have you join us. Again, that's the Fargo Theater next Wednesday night at 7. We have a guest with us today, and in a way, in my head, I had to giggle a little bit because they are the Mellencamps from Columbus, Indiana, but it's near Seymour, so I really have to ask if there's another Mellencamp that y'all are related to in that neighborhood, or am I drawing too far of a conclusion?
That's about every Mellencamp, I think, is from Seymour. So same guy came from Germany, but that's probably the extent of the relation.
Okay, so maybe there's some distant relationships, and you guys don't mind playing a little John Cougar Mellencamp when the flower farm is going. So that sounds fair. So Geraldine and Richard, it is wonderful to have you join us today. Let's just start out by, I read an article in regards to your operation that was in John Deere's The Furrow magazine. And it sounds like you've been farming, but then there was a slight shift in direction. So who wants to start that discussion and explaining it to us?
Sure. So we were early on in our marriage. We didn't have kids yet. And at that point, Richard was engineering during the day and farming at night. And I really kind of needed a hobby, but and also I always enjoyed cut flowers, and I was buying them in the grocery store. And my mom, she said, you know, you can grow great flowers here in Indiana. You should try it. And so with my mom's help, and I always teased Richard about not buying me flowers. So I just decided to grow my own. And I think he would say probably to the advice to other husbands is just buy the flowers, because it turned into something a lot bigger for us. But so now we frame it as diversifying our farm.
Yes.
So
I think diversifying is a pretty fair statement for what you do now. All right. You were farming, would I be correct to say, corn and soybean farm before you moved into the diversification? Would that be fair?
Correct. Yes. Yep.
Any livestock? So you were already looking at using manure and some green fertilizer methods as well before the flower business came along?
I grew up with cattle, but for the longest time, it was more of they were more pets than actual commodity we were producing, and eventually kind of got out of that. And so we had a need for, you know, something else on the farm, it seemed like. And we've got three small children now, and I know farm equipment, even since when I was a kid, has gotten so much larger to operate. You know, you're not using a 50 horsepower tractor anymore. It's several hundred horsepower. And a lot of people have livestock, and that's really good to get children in on mm-hmm. Farming and agriculture. But, you know, we didn't have that. And quite frankly, livestock, you got to take care of once or twice a day. And that's not something we really wanted to have that, you know, commitment full time, as busy as we were. And so flowers, you know, just like other crops, you can leave them alone a day or two. And kind of looking forward to getting our young children more involved, you know, on the flower farm as well. Really small equipment, you know, more hands-on chores type stuff that you would get with livestock.
What kind of what different variety of flowers are you guys growing right now?
A lot. It depends on the season, but we We probably have 10 to 15 different varieties in our three greenhouses right now, as far as our spring crops. The two biggest would be tulips and ranunculus. And then in the summer, we do field crops, and there's numerous, probably 20 different kinds. We'll grow, you know, 5 to 10 different kinds of sunflowers. How many sunflowers do we grow a year?
We've got about over 100,000 seeds.
Yeah. So
ready to plant. So we succession those weekly. And so you're always having those are blown open. We harvest right when the petals start to open. So those got away from us before we could harvest.
So they're good for photos.
which usually happens. But along with sunflowers, we plant zinnias, celosia.
A few acres of dahlias every summer.
Cosmos. So
quite
a few different.
These are our field-grown tulips. One way we've tried to kind of improve each year is on the edges of each season, utilize the greenhouses. So we grow greenhouses in the tulips in the greenhouse and in the field, so that we'll have tulips about 6 weeks earlier than if we would have had them just in the field production. And that way we can kind of get to our customers earlier. That's the ranunculus, picture of it there. We are knee deep in that right now.
Okay. I'm going to back up just a little bit. So you've been farming corn and soybeans, and where do you start with the flowers? I feel like this didn't just start out with, all right, we're going to put this third of an acre into some flowers. Was it a lot bigger operation than that? And what have you expanded to at this point? Because I did hear you say acres of zinnia.
Well, he can answer about the total acres. I'm not as good. I did not grow up in agriculture. I just married into it. So I'm not as good as the numbers on acres and whatnot. But, you know, really my mom and her background just as a hobby gardener kind of got us into it. But we also, I will say the flower farming community is extremely collaborative and shares information in a very open way, I would say much more so than the corn and grain or corn and soybean community. And so we've taken courses from other flower farmers and have found mentors and people who are a few years ahead of us. I would say the American grown community started about 5 to 10 years ago and is growing. So we've really leaned on others to learn, but certainly Richard's background and his agronomic expertise from the grain farm has definitely and his mechanical expertise. We're always, you know, changing equipment in some way to modify it to work for us on the flower farm. And those two things really set us apart, I would say, from our peers.
Yeah, I'd say traditionally cut flower farming is more gardening focused, whereas we're trying to be like with some what she talked about, some peers and people we've learned from through social media that were maybe more vegetable focused in the past, but you know, that more production mindset of, okay, what can we grow well? What can we grow profitably at scale? And how do we mechanize as much of that process as possible?
You guys, there, I have so many questions. I mean, we're talking, what are you changing for mechanics? We need to talk about planting and fertilization, and are you saving seed? And we're going to do that after we touch on our bottom of the hour news. So it's going to be rapid fire, and we're going to return with Geraldine and Richard Mellencamp. They are from Columbus, Indiana, and we're talking about fresh flower farming, something a little bit different than most of you do, but we'll find out more after this. Welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. And what a wonderful topic for the day as we talk about spring, fresh flowers. And we're talking with Geraldine and Richard Mellencamp. They are in Columbus, Indiana. And I'm curious, when you started out with the fresh flower business, how do you plant all of these? Is everything by seed? I saw tulips, so I know those are by bulb. Hand labor? Have you modified something as far as equipment to mechanize the whole situation? What does planting look like for you?
Yeah, so we started out hoeing in sunflower seeds by hand, a lot of planting in weed mat that we had burned holes in to try to minimize that, but led to a lot of labor and work just to plant and maintain the crops. And so I've worked a lot, watched on social media what other farms have done, and adapted some of the equipment we have on the farm. And so there's in the greenhouses, we still do a lot of transplanting of plugs
by hand.
But you know, tulips, yeah, we'll dig a large trench with tulips with a tractor and put those in and then cover them up and just harvest the whole bed at a time. As far as dahlias, made a potato plow planter that installs drip tape with the dahlias as we plant them, and then follow that up after harvest. We'll dig those up with a modified one-row potato digger that allows us to bring all those up to divide in the winter and plant the next year. And then something that borrowed from watching vegetable farmers, a small, narrow row vegetable planter that allows us to plant those sunflowers and other crops that really like a 7-inch row spacing instead of your normal 30-inch row spacing that we've got on the farm. So we get those right-sized sunflowers for like a bouquet versus, you know, a giant sunflower head, which isn't going to look good in a vase on your kitchen table, right, for instance.
Sort of overpowering. Yes. So when you were doing all of the flowers, I'm curious, do you save any of the seed once you get to the end of the season, or are you completely reliant on suppliers to get you seed as you need it?
So some of it is patented and you're not supposed to save. Others we save. So for instance, like I mentioned, the dahlias, we'll dig those up. However, the tulips, while they're on bulb, we pull them off and harvest with the bulb. We just pull them right out of the ground. And so that allows us to store them in the cooler for a couple weeks at a time. And then all we have to do is cut that bulb off and then put it in water, and it's going to hydrate and perk right back up. Similar like with peonies, we can cut those, but store them dry and then have them, you know, up to a month later. But tulips, the downside with that is once you pull that bulb out or harvest that tulip, you're not going to get a good, even if you cut it off at the ground, all that energy, all that plant material is gone. So it's not going to produce a flower the following year. So that's probably our least margin crop that we have to buy every year. Usually they come from the Netherlands, big tulip producing region. They've got that dialed in.
Everything else we either source, like the crops that go in the greenhouse are higher dollar, higher value crops, and we source plugs for those, or ranunculus is a corm or a bulb as well. So we buy those. And then our field flowers, like zinnias, that's all seed. So we could save seed. It just hasn't been part of our program.
Sometimes it's not economical. With dahlias, it is, as each dahlia tuber we buy usually costs around $5. So if you can divide, say, 5 to 10 tubers off of one plant, that's very
economical.
Gives you a reason to save it as opposed to some other, like tulips, for instance.
Now you guys, you guys say you still raise corn. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. Corn and soybeans.
Okay, so what do you enjoy more? Do you enjoy raising the flowers more or the corn and soybeans? And I bet this is going to be a split answer here.
I'm much more of a row crop farmer. I'd say my brother enjoys the flowers a lot more. He helps us. And so I've got a small, just a 25-horse John Deere tractor, and he's put probably 400 of the 450 hours on it so far.
Wow.
Planting those successions of sunflowers and just keeping all the crops in order. So it's different options, but again, like I've used our 4730 deer sprayer with 100-foot boom to reach out across our dahlia beds and spray them with insecticide, fungicide. Having a private applicator's license is really helpful and beneficial. Being able to see, read the labels and understand a lot of the chemistries we use on the row crop farm are labeled for many of the flowers we grow. Universities have studies, North Carolina State, Cornell,
Kansas.
They've got a lot of good resources out there.
That is huge. That is a question I wanted to ask is, what are you fighting for pests? Are we attacking insecticide, fungicides? And you just answered that for me and kind of how you're getting it done. Okay, so now I want to know about weather-wise. Here, I would be so afraid of an ill-timed hailstorm. Has that happened?
Yes. We've had that happen. Yeah, it's really sad when you go out there and the flowers look like confetti. We have just tried to zero in on like the highest valued crops that we can get in the greenhouse that has that kind of protection versus growing larger at a larger scale, the field crops that the seed is a lot less expensive and the labor to plant it is a lot less expensive. So we are okay with, you know, losing a succession here or there if it's out in the field.
What about fertilizing? Are you doing like a liquid, a granular? Do you not? Because they don't necessarily.
All the above. So again, keeping pH and balance is important, but then also NPK, we'll spread that over our outdoor fields, our indoor and our drip tape, either the indoor or the dahlias that we apply drip tape when we plant those. We'll put a lot of liquid fertilizer. Generally, it's the in-furrow fertilizer that's left over after planting corn for the year. So it's got, some NPK and micros and all that good stuff in it as well.
Okay. So now I've heard you say greenhouses. How big are the greenhouses? Are you selling flowers like in the spring for people to come in and pick up transplant seedlings, et cetera, to take home to plant in their own yards? Or are you keeping those greenhouse plants strictly for yourselves?
So we grow in the ground in our greenhouses. So we don't have any tables or no hanging plants, no transplants. It's all, everything is in the ground and we're growing really high value crops that are mostly used for the wedding industry in the spring. Like in the April and May, and also crops that would, their coloring would be damaged if they got wet from overhead watering or rain. So you've got to have them inside a greenhouse to protect them, and they need a little bit more consistent environment than outside, field conditions. So yeah, right there is a good, if you can see all the crop, everything is planted into the ground. And the greenhouse is just there for protection, basically from wind and rain. So that's ranunculus crop. That's probably the, we can have that as early as late February. And it will bloom until June, depending on how hot, our spring and summer is. It doesn't like, it's an Italian flower. It likes a Mediterranean climate. So,
once it gets above 80, it's going to stop blooming.
Yeah, it'll stop production. So, depends on how fast it warms up here in Indiana. This is eucalyptus, and that's been something that's really great for us. We've, can grow that in the greenhouse year round. When we started selling to florists, they didn't want just blooms. They wanted some, greenery as well, especially those for weddings. So that's something that we've started our first year when we had greenhouses. To answer your question about size, they are 30 feet wide and 100 feet long. And they're completely climate controlled. They're heated.
Automated.
So, that's nice. The sides will roll down if it's too cold. They'll roll up if it's too hot. Yeah. So we don't have to babysit them nearly as much. But, it's a big investment. So that's why we have to make sure we're putting the highest value crops in.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I can see that. Because who are your customers? You mentioned florists. Are you going directly to retail, wholesalers? Do you have folks stopping by the farm to buy fresh cut?
I would like a farm stand, but Richard doesn't want anybody coming to the farm because it's, you know, our house and the grain farm's right there too. Our biggest customer is direct to consumer through our subscription model, where we deliver whatever's fresh on the farm. Some people get it weekly, every 2 weeks. And so that's, you know, within a 1 hour radius pretty much of our farm. We do sell direct to florists, and we have sold to wholesalers in the past, you know, large wholesalers in the Indianapolis area. But what we found in the last 2 years, our niche is selling, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 stems a week to other flower farms that are in a bigger market than us, bigger metro area, and they don't have the production or scale that we have.
They have the customer.
But they have the customer and the base and the marketing. So we're selling to other flower farms.
That's awesome. Okay. So also, what are you doing on a year-round basis? Because I think about the blooms that you're working with, and I specifically think spring, summer, fall. Do you do something as well for the Christmas season that keeps you fully functioning all year round, or is there something else that's taking your priority in the winter months?
We have kind of made a concerted effort to leave out of the, you know, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Valentine's Day holidays because we need a break. This isn't what Richard or I do full time. And we have increased our staff, but it's just a lot less predictable in terms of bloom time when you're dealing with really cloudy days, cold days. So our season is mostly March through October, or frost. And, we just find that we need that break in the winter, both on the grain farm, the flower farm. So, I mean, there are still crops, you know, the ranunculus we start in the greenhouse in September, October. It's a 6 month crop. So, versus most of our field crops are 90 day, our sunflowers are 45 day. We just need that break.
Yeah. It's just like grain farming. It may be a downtime, but there's still a lot to do. Like she was saying, we're starting crops in the greenhouse over the winter. We're dividing dahlias and packing them, getting them ready to go. So there's quite a bit to keep an eye on, keep the greenhouse heat running, keep everything watered, and repairs for next year too. So it's similar to farming. A lot of people think you're just working, you know, spring to fall, but there's quite a bit in between as well.
I'm so glad you clarified all that. And for folks who want to follow along with your story, I do believe besides a website, you also have some social media. So please share that with us.
Yep. So LaurelynFarms.com. That's my older sister, Lauren. It's her name, and my name, Geraldine, kind of smashed together. Our at LaurelynFarms on Instagram, and our Laurelyn Flower Farm, sorry, on Instagram and Facebook. So we aren't as active on social in the off season, but we're getting there, and we're always trying to encourage our younger help that comes on to help us in those ways, since we're, you know, elder millennials.
Thank you so much today, Richard, Geraldine. Absolutely a fabulous way to end a week is talking about something as bright and sunny as flower farming. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thanks, guys. Well, when we come back, we're going to have a recap on the weather. I think Bridget's got another couple of ag topics to go over. Crazy weather heading our way over the next 48 hours. We'll run down the details coming up here after the break. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Friday, March 21st, 1:54 in the afternoon. We've got one of our favorites. Well, loved by some, hated by some, too. I don't know why would they not like this wonderful individual. John, you're on line one. What's going on, John?
I was going to say, define favorites.
Well, it's kind of a broad term.
You're one of my favorites. We have a thumbnail themed around you, John.
Well, see, you're Edison's favorite.
Yeah, well, you know, some people like Elon Musk, others, well, not so much right now, evidently.
Kind of like you.
So, yeah, exactly.
See?
So this morning, I heard your dilemma about a shiny bobble in question, and, you know, I went down to the WAG Engineering and Team Development Department, and we came up with two answers. And one of them was everybody suggested maybe a part-time gig as a TV meteorologist somewhere.
Okay, that's one. What would the other one be?
The other one was, we've developed a seed. Not a pill, we're not big pharma, but we developed a seed, whereby, instead of a lab-grown diamond, you can have a soil-grown diamond.
Now
depending on the crop, they may tell you that it's worth diamonds.
Hmm. John,
all you have to do is trade some of your hard-earned cash, not a lot, for this magic bag of seed.
Interesting.
That's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, you'll have to get me in contact with that person. Thanks, John.
Well, just go down to the development department downstairs next to the desk.
Okay. We'll go down. John, have a great weekend. Oh, boy. Always great hearing from John. Okay, there we go. I don't know if you're watching online. That is classic, Edison.
We need that sometimes.
That's about how it feels some days, doesn't it? Well, let's take a look at the forecast because we do have some better weather ahead, but we've got a few bumps to go through first. We've got a lot of sunshine out there right now. Windy conditions, though, with temperatures in the 20s and low 30s. And we're pretty much going to stay there for the rest of the afternoon with those north winds gusting over 30 at times. Tonight, down to about 10 to 15 above. And then tomorrow, breezy out of the south. Southeast winds about 15 to 30 and gusting higher at times with highs in the upper 40s. And then a pretty strong clipper system comes our way. That's going to drag down some windy and colder weather for Sunday. We'll have north winds 20 to 35 gusting up to 40, a few snow showers, less than an inch accumulation. Not looking at much here in the FM area, but if you go in the far northern valley, northwest Minnesota, those areas could pick up 2-3 inches of snow, along with the strong winds, could have some travel troubles up far north, right up along the Canadian border. And then as we head into next week, we start to warm things up. Low to mid 40s on Monday, and we'll be pushing 60 towards the end of next week. So we're going in the right direction. Still looks like we'll have some unsettled weather as we head into the next weekend and the first few days in April. So we'll keep an eye on that. We could use the moisture. Boy, could we use the moisture. And according to the LRC, we've got something coming in here right at the end of this month, start of April, which would be next weekend. And then, again, mid-April through the end of April, that's when we go back into our stormy part of the LRC cycle. And that's when we're looking at the potential for some much more widespread precip around the area. Fingers crossed that that does pan out. Looks like a pretty good shot that it will, especially the end of April. We could have a big one around here towards the end of April. So that's something we'll be keeping a close eye on. Again, Bridget, we need the moisture around here. We're 2 feet below normal when it comes to snowfall on this season. That probably doesn't surprise a lot of people, but boy, that's back-to-back dry winters for the most part. So hopefully we can kind of change that around like we did last spring, where we got quite a bit of rainfall in the spring.
Rainfall tends to do that. Other things to keep in mind, folks, well, apparently due to a new study, you may be less depressed and less anxious because you drink milk. Those who drink plant-based beverages apparently can have about a 14% higher chance of depression. So have a glass of milk this weekend and feel good about it.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, for Bridget and myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us on Weather and Ag. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.